Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Athletic.
Well, happy new year and welcome to the first Race Formula E podcast of 2024. And with the new season just about to start, would seem to be a good time to do a season preview. Joining us is a voice that's going to be increasingly familiar to you Formula E fans over the course of the season, and that's lead commentator Tom Brooks. Tom, your debut on the show, welcome along.
Thank you very much, PDB. Yeah, very glad to be here. Looking forward to the season ahead and looking forward to previewing the season with yourself and Sam today.
Yeah, and joining us as always, our Formula E stalwart, the Sebastian Buemi of this podcast. Sam, good holiday?
Yeah, great, thank you. Yep, no skiing or other alpine pursuits as Mr. Buemi would have been doing, but happy with my lot. Yeah, looking forward to the season ahead. It's going to be great.
So, Tom, you've had, 6 months probably to prepare? It's been an enormously long off-season, but are you revved up and raring to get behind the mic for Mexico?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. It's a bit of a weird one for me because though Formula E came to an end, I had other stuff going on. So I also work for Gran Turismo as the voice of their video game and do things for British Superbikes as well. So my off-season hasn't really happened. I sort of stopped at the beginning of December, and then come the beginning of January, I'm starting again, if you like. So I haven't really had that much time to sort of sit down and take stock of exactly what's sort of unfolding. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, Formula E at the end of last season when I came in for Rome and London was amazing fun. So just looking forward to kicking off and doing a whole season. That's the great thing about this now, is that I get to tell everything from start to the finish.
Yeah, and if all goes as planned, and as we will delve into over the course of this podcast, probably in for a bit of a cracking season, wouldn't you say, Sam?
Well, look, there is an assumption that it will be one of either Mitch Evans, Nick Cassidy, Pascal Wehrlein, Antonio Felix da Costa, or Jake Dennis, or as we're calling them, the manufacturer Jaguar or Porsche teams. I think that's pretty clear. I believe that assumption is pretty correct from what we saw at Valencia and from what I'm hearing from some of the other teams. But in typical Formula E style, I'm going to go for what in 2023 at least was the most unlikely of those five. I'm going for Antonio Felix da Costa, and I'll tell you why. He's never had more than one mediocre season in Formula E. He always comes back swinging, and I think the reason why he wasn't quite the top of his game last year was nothing more than the fact that he was getting bedded in at Porsche, finding his feet, understanding what the Gen 3 Porsche was all about. And he was playing catch-up to Wehrlein, who had done a lot more testing with that car ahead of the start of the season. That was seen in those first few races where Wehrlein sort of dominated, didn't he? So, yeah, I'm going to go for da Costa. I think the decision for him to focus on Formula E as well, although he might not have liked it at the time, and he certainly was, I think, privately pretty displeased about it because he just loves racing, I think that could pay off handsomely in 2024. And I think he's the most unlikely dark horse, isn't he? Because he's always been there. He's always been there and thereabouts. He did such a great job at DS Techita and was the champion in 19 and 20. And I think he can become a double champion in 2024. It won't be easy. It's going to be close. And all the names that I mentioned at the top there will win races and I think will be in the hunt for the title. But I've just got this feeling that da Costa is really going to prove a lot of people wrong after, for him, a pretty mediocre season last season.
So, Tom, you spent the winter in the history books watching the old race highlights and whatever. Have you brought yourself up to speed on who you think might be the title favourite in waiting for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look past the likes of Dennis, Cassidy, Evans and Wehrlein, etc., just given their form from last year, Dennis in particular had a really consistent season. So would be great to see him do that. I know that Andretti obviously are sort of looking more towards the team's championship this year as well. Cassidy, he was so disappointed in London. So I think that he'll be coming back, you know, all arms swinging out, if you like, really. And now with the factory Jaguar team, it's a really formidable lineup between Cassidy and Evans. I completely echo Sam's sentiments about Antonio Felix da Costa as well. I'm fortunate enough to work with his brother Duarte within Gran Turismo. And I had a good chat with him actually when we were in Barcelona for our world finals a few weeks ago. And I said, you know, how's he doing? And he said he was so disappointed about this year, but he's been able to reset and he's looking forward to it. He's going to come out all guns swinging. So yeah, I think to my money, I reckon da Costa is going to be up there as well. But just given how disappointed I saw Cassidy was at the end of London, that's kind of where I would be at with it.
Interesting you should say that. I'm thinking that this is Jaguar season, but I've got a feeling that this is the time that Mitch Evans finally delivers that championship that his performances have absolutely merited, basically since he joined the series. He's got everything, you know. I think Formula E posted some of the greatest overtakes over their Christmas period. They could have done one that was just Mitch's, and it would have been equally at the level that those four they picked were at. And I know, I've just got a feeling. I've got a feeling that Jaguar have come so close and not quite done it, and this is going to be Evans's time to shine.
I tell you what, when you said he's got everything, actually he hasn't, because they've not got Phil Charles now. And I think Jaguar are naturally downplaying the fact that Phil Charles' exit, and for people who don't know, Phil Charles was the technical director of Jaguar and left in an extreme sort of, something that people didn't see, a real shock. He left in sort of November time, early November, I think. And that has really rocked the boat there. The question is going to be how they pivot from that and how they regroup. And they're already doing that in terms of reallocating some of the roles within the team, technical roles. But Phil Charles was a big part of that team, and he made a lot of decisions about the way that the team operated on a technical level. And having spoken to Mitch Evans and other people at Jaguar, it did catch them by surprise. So that will be a key feature, I think, just how much destabilization they may be from that decision, personal decision of Phil Charles to move on elsewhere. And we believe he's going to DS Penske. And I think that's going to be something really interesting through the season, how that may or may not affect the team and this title that they covered so much.
Do you think it will have that big an impact on the day-to-day running the race outfit? I mean, surely that's more about how they would have been looking at evolving for the Gen 3 Evo rather than race prep for this season.
Yeah, I think a character such as Phil was across the board. So he was hands-on day-to-day and race-by-race. I think if you watch the recently released Unplugged series, you'll see Phil making a lot of decisions at the coalface and been integral to how the races were run. That was just, that's what he lives and breathes for. You know, he's a racer. At the same time, you know, he always had one eye on the future and on the next set of regulations, which homologation wise comes in next season with the second part of the Gen 3, which we're colloquially calling Gen 3 Evo. I mean, there is enough strength in depth at Jaguar to cover those things, but Formula E is so competitive and it is so close between the manufacturers and, as we saw last year with the privateer teams as well, that you have to have everything completely perfect. And to lose somebody of Phil's standing, and like I said, it's kind of been downplayed a bit at Jaguar, but certainly they will know themselves that they have to really plug any gaps, and they have to react, and they have to allocate the roles accordingly. And Formula E being what it is in terms of the pure competition and the closeness, you know, if you're slightly destabilized, then it can tell, and that might be a really small thing during free practice, or it might be some, you know, a relationship that Phil might have had with a supplier. It could be any of these things that just knocks them off course slightly, and you just can't afford to do that in Formula E. Equally, it could all be fine, and Jaguar will be, I think, living up to their billing as favourites, because I see them as now with Nick Cassidy in that team as the strongest combined team in terms of what they have to activate that Jaguar I Type 6.
Tom, like Sam, you mentioned six names that are potential championship winners. What about race winners? You know, how many others do you think can get there, throw their hat or throw their helmet into the ring when it comes to standing on the top step of the podium?
It's a good question. What do we see? Seven different winners in 2023, didn't we? I reckon we'll see a similar sort of number this year. Some other names I'd love to see up there. We saw Jake Hughes getting a couple of poles in his rookie season. Now, of course, with Sam Bird on the other side of the garage, I reckon we'll see both of those drivers up the sharp end. Obviously, it depends on how they're able to get the maximum out of their Nissan powertrain. Max Gunter again at Maserati, he took a victory last year, so I wonder whether he might be able to repeat the same sort of feat. And also on the other side of the Andretti garage, you've got Norman Nato as well, a driver that, you know, finished 10th in the standings last year, got a podium in Rome. So I think that he could be a bit of a dark horse. And as I alluded to earlier on, Andretti focusing more on the team's title for this season, they're going to be hoping that Norman is getting the maximum out of the car, and that will include getting regular podiums and hopefully with that race victories.
Sam, any other names you want to throw into the winner's circle potentially?
Well, intriguingly, I look back at something similar we did last year on these questions on an editorial feature for the-race.com. On one hand, everybody got it colossally wrong, including me, saying that Stoffel Vandoorne would win a back-to-back title. I mean, how wrong could we be? But conversely, I think somebody else in our editorial team pretty much got it spot on with who would win races last season. So I'm similar to Tom, actually. I think that the five that I mentioned, you know, the five favourites, let's say, in the case of Nato, Robin Freins and Sebastian Buemi, I think, you know, they've got a chance of winning races this season, as have either of the DS Penske drivers, Jean-Éric Vergne and Stoffel Vandoorne. I think it's a slightly less likely that DS Penske will win a race this year, but it could happen if circumstances allow. And don't forget, we're going to get the attack charge pit stops coming in at some stage this season, so that could shape things up nicely. I'm going to go for Buemi being added to the favourites, let's say, the famous five, as we call them. I think he will end his five-year win drought this season because...
5 years, wow.
And it's incredible. It'll be 5 years in July this year. I think he should have got much better results last season. He had some dreadful luck during the season. I think also, as an outsider, it'd be nice to see Oliver Rowland win. I think he'll hit the ground running at Nissan on his return to Nissan. And I see him being particularly strong at some of the permanent tracks, so Misano or Shanghai. I think he could really upset the apple cart there. You know, Nissan were really strong at Portland last season, and I think that they are super good on those kind of circuits. I'm probably doing Envision a bit of a disservice, not mentioning them in the sort of the big bright shot window, let's say, but I think it's going to be really hard for them to do what they did in 2023. They're a super good team. They're the champions. They're the team's champions. But I just see this season the strength of Jaguar, Andretti, Porsche, and then some of the, let's call them the outsiders like Oliver Rowland at Nissan, potentially McLaren as well. You know, we know Jake Hughes is super strong. We'll have to wait and see what Sam Bird does as his teammate, but I could see at least eight different winners this season, which, you know, is just brilliant, isn't it? I mean, it's how many championships have that level of spread of winners. I think the ultimate winner this season is going to be the fans and the people following this championship.
Yeah, as I was preparing my answer for this, I was trying to make sure I didn't come up with more potential winners than there were actually races. So I'm pretty sure back in the competitive car, Freins might nick one. I think you're right. I think they'll Envision will struggle to compete at quite the level they did, but they won't have gone have lost it completely overnight. And I can see him getting himself up there. I reckon at least one, if not both, of the DS Penske drivers will we'll get there as well. Interesting, you mentioned my pick for the surprise of the season, because I think Roland and Nissan may well be the pick for that. I think he's got a bit to prove. They've got a bit to prove. Like you say, there were times when that car looked genuinely quick, maybe not so much in race pace, but certainly in qualifying. And I think he could really get himself in there in the mix and shake it up. Sam, what do you reckon to that?
Yeah, I mean, the aforementioned Roland, I think I just see his hunger. I mean, it was immensely disappointing what happened at Mahindra last season. I mean, he really, it just ended, and they needed a change, both team and driver there. He's been away from the cockpit for now, what is it, sort of 7 months. And I know Oliver quite well, and he is a formidable competitor. He will be aching to get back into this championship and proving that the sort of loss of momentum from really when he left Nissan at the end of, what was it, season? It would have been season seven, actually. He needs to really, at the age of, I think, 13, I'll be 31 this year, he needs to really get people talking about what he can do. And when he is in the right car, you know, we saw at times that he was beating a much more experienced and a much more a driver with a bigger reputation, let's call it, Sebastian Buemi as his teammate when he was at Nissan first time around. Intriguingly, he's going there now, the first time in his career, he's going there as the senior driver in a team. You know, Sascha Fenestraz, he's got 6 years on, Oliver's got 6 years on Sascha Fenestraz, and Fenestraz has a season, a generally good season as a rookie campaign behind him, and that won't be easy getting on top of Fenestraz. But I just see that being a really interesting battle, and I think Roland at some of the circuits, with what I saw with that Nissan and what it was capable of last season, been a real somebody who can upset the apple cart of the Jaguars and the Porsches as well. So, surprise of the season. I mean, not much of a surprise if you followed Formula E since Gen 2 when Oliver joined the championship, but I see him there. Just a quick mention of Mahindra. I think, you know, they've had a complete reset. Two drivers that have won A, a championship in Nick de Vries, and B, you know, a bunch of races with Edo Mortara when he was at Venturi. You know, they've got a super strong team now, and they will have a complete slate wipe clean there. They're rebuilding in the terms of their personnel, and lots of new faces are going to be there and coming into that team. And I just see that resurgence of energy really improving them. I'm not going to say that they're going to get poles and podiums and so forth, but I see them having a much stronger season than they had, irrespective of the fact that they can't change much on the car. And likewise, Apt Cooper, you know, we saw on occasion last season them getting into the top six with Nico Müller in particular. So when the circumstances allow, I can see those two teams having more smiles on their faces than they had last season, let's say.
Tom, anyone you think's going to bring a bit of a surprise? You're going to get on a limb and say that Tictum's going to shake it all up or something?
Tictum for the title or something like that. Yeah. I completely agree with what Sam said there. I was actually at Mahindra a few days ago and had a look round, met some of the team, because obviously they had a bit of a reshuffle. So really keen to see what they're going to do. I think that they're coming at it from a point of view of looking at the last four races as their benchmark for 2024, essentially. And let's be honest, the last four races for Mahindra couldn't have gone much worse. So any improvement from that, rather than looking at Mexico last year, will be an improvement for them. You know, with Mortara and De Vries, really strong lineup. I'll be really keen to see what De Vries is going to be like in the Gen 3 car. Whether he'll be able to spring a surprise or not, I don't know. Obviously, they had that compensation test recently as well, but it was pretty much a washout from what I understand. So on the other side of it, I think Fryant's going back to Envision. He's the person that I'd be looking out for. I wonder whether he might be able to... It's not necessarily a surprise, because we know the pace and performance that he can put in, but he would be my one to watch. And then finally, Jay Handaruvala at Maserati. Maserati, again, won a race last year courtesy of Max Gunter. And I do wonder whether, once he's got his head around the Formula E car, the tyres, all of the different variables, whether Handaruvala might be able to, again, just throw a few surprises in. He's got a very impressive junior single-seater record. So I'll be keen to see what he's going to be able to do.
Yeah, he's an interesting case, Deruvala, because moving into a race with an outfit like that in Formula E is quite tricky these days. The testing's very limited. The cars are very different to anything else that he's raced before. He's got decent pedigree in a lower Formula 2 especially. I think it's asking a lot for him to take on Gunther and potentially win a race. Sam, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real struggle for Deruvala for all those reasons, but also, and I think we'll come on to this in a separate question, but the Maserati MSG team have gone through quite a lot of changes. There's been a lot of destabilisation at that team, and I'd be very surprised if Maserati MSG have a season like they had last season, or second half of the season at least. In terms of a rookie coming in, is it better place for a rookie to come in the second season of a rule set, or is it better to do what Fenestraz and Hughes did last season and come in when it's all level for everybody? I tend to think it's the latter of those two. So I think Jehan has got a lot to deal with, and I wouldn't expect any kind of results for him in terms of big points or potentially any points until at least the second half of the season. That's quite conservative, and obviously, you know, he'll be saying no, you know, I can get results pretty quickly. But having spoken to him a couple of months ago in down in Monaco, you know, he's quite realistic about his chances. But I think the continued flux of that team might just have sort of put some ambition on hold for next season. I think a good season for him would be keep his nose clean, get some really good experience, finish majority of the races, not get involved in accidents, get a few points on the board, and then build for 2025. I mean, I think that's the best case scenario for him. But look, you know, we've been proved wrong so many times with rookies in the past. But I tend to think that he's going to have to keep his ambitions in check this season.
Someone who's going to have much bigger ambitions, you imagine, is Nyck de Vries. Tom mentioned he'd been to the Mahindra factory. He's obviously got an enormous amount to prove, former champion, but that stint in Formula One didn't really boost his reputation any. Losing his drive mid-season is probably most drivers' worst nightmare. What can we expect from him this season, Sam? He's going to really struggle to get back onto the winning way straight away, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it will be a struggle initially, just because he has so few laps in a Gen 3 car compared to the rest of the field, bar Deruvala. It didn't help his cause Valencia, did it, when he's, you know, when they had all that disruption. And as Tom said, the compensation test only went so far a few weeks ago. So he's not as well prepared as he should be heading into the season. And I think really, let's say from Monaco onwards, what I would expect is to see him challenging and getting some points and showing that, you know, he can be a proposition heading for 2025 and when the Gen 3 Evo comes out. I think in his mind he'll be thinking more about really about 25 long term in terms of getting back into the winner's circle and onto the podium. You know, there may be opportunities for him this season to fight for a top six position and more potentially. We saw it occasionally last season, didn't we? And again, to talk about the attack charge, that could open things up for some creativity and some shock results. But, you know, they're going to be slim pickings, I think. I think generally Mahindra will be better. I expect Mortara to be pretty strong from the word go. But I think just that natural lack of understanding of the Gen 3, you know, Nyck hasn't done a Gen 3 race. So some of this kind of peloton or Kirin or whatever you want to, cycling metaphor you want to use, you know, he's not used to that. So that will naturally take at least two or three races to understand properly. But the one thing we know in Nyck is he is aggressive. And I'm pretty sure that actually it will favour his style eventually. But, you know, as I said, I think it will be later on in the season that we see him with a genuine smile on his face in terms of achieving results.
So, Tom, now, Formula E is not exactly the easiest form of motor racing to commentate on anyway. As Sam mentioned, I'm not having Kieran racing, by the way. There's not some guy in a little motorbike out the front racing. Yeah. But the big pack, Pursuit, I love Pursuit you can have. The pack racing means there are so many overtakes going on per lap that it's not even worth even trying to record them all and to bring a narrative from that, tricky enough. Add in the potential of attack charging where at any given time half the field might be on a different lap to the other. It sounds like a commentator's worst nightmare to me. How the hell are you going to deal with that?
I'm going to have a work cut out, aren't I? I reckon. It's going to be interesting to see how it works out, isn't it, with the attack charging. And I'm looking forward to the different variable that it's going to add. But you're right, in terms of keeping up to speed with it, it is going to be a challenge. It's like one of those things, though. You do one race and you think, oh, okay, so that's what happened here. And you can kind of get a feel for it. But then, obviously, you go to another circuit, which could be a different length, and maybe they don't go a lap down, maybe they do. So, yeah, it is going to be a case of keeping up to speed with everything and frantically writing notes down. And the irony is, as a commentator during a race, you prepare this folder full of notes. You never bloody look at the thing, because especially in Formula E, it's so frantic and fast-paced that you don't have time to. So, yeah, I'm going to have to find a solution that works quite nicely. Maybe I'll get Sam in my ear to sort of feed me different bits of information to deal with the other five voices of production that I've got talking to me at the same time.
For the directors, they're working which bit to focus on at a time, you know, because where the leader might be coming out in the middle of a battle, it's really going to be a massive challenge.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I am really looking forward to seeing, as I said, what the different dynamic is going to be. But yeah, from a production point of view, I have no idea how they are able to do it. And obviously, we've got Whisper coming in for this year with Aurora working alongside as well as they have done for the last few seasons. And honestly, the level of production that they are able to create on the fly when there is so much happening, especially at races like Portland last year, where it was, you know, four or five different overtakes every corner, seemingly.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So, yeah, hats off to them. And the fact that they are able to keep up to speed with it just makes my job that bit easier, because if they are able to know what's going to happen and almost kind of predict two or three corners ahead of what's going on, as a commentator, you've got the tools at your disposal, and it's down to you to tell that story as efficiently and effectively as you can.
So, Sam, have you got any more clarity on exactly how it's going to happen, where it's going to happen?
Well, I haven't got time to help Tom out. I'm too busy dodging the FIA and team principals and getting into trouble. So, no, I'll do what I can, Tom. I think, initially it's not going to be an issue, because I genuinely don't see this initiative coming in until partway through the season. I doubt that we will see it before Misano, which is the natural place for it to be because of the permanent facilities, and that's in April. You know, we're not going to see in Mexico, we know that. I think Diriyah is too soon. So the next race is, you know, Hyderabad, likely not to happen. Sao Paulo and Tokyo will not have good enough pit facilities or pit lanes to trial this and to use this in a competitive situation. So Misano is going to be, I think, the first time that we're probably going to see it. That said, the key for me is that TV are going to be crucial for this, because seeing it in action at Valencia, honestly, it is extremely dull. The car comes in, it stops for 35 seconds, nothing happens. I mean, the driver literally just puts it in neutral and waits for his team to let him go. There is no dynamism in this pit stop. So from a narrative point of view and an information point of view, it's going to be quite challenging for not only Tom, but the graphics people and everybody involved in the production of the TV to make this a feature and a dynamic feature.
I mean, surely the team are going to send some people over to give the visor a wipe and to, you know, make sure the logos are visible or something, aren't they? They're going to give it a little bit of drama.
Well, they're going to have to think of something, because, you know, a pit stop, for instance, a WEC pit stop, a World Endurance Championship pit stop, is about the same length, but of course they have refueling as well as refueling, and they have tire changes as well. So there's a lot going on.
Maybe a driver swap. Yeah.
This is just somebody plugging in a plug into the back of the chassis. So Yeah, I'm not sure people have thought about that.
And super equally, slow-mo, oh, he's not quite aligned the prong.
I reckon send you down there for an in-race feature, Sam, so you can write something up.
Yeah, but my days of wandering around pit lanes ended when I almost got killed at Kyle Army about 20 years ago, Tom. So I've got no compulsion to go into a live pit lane ever again. That's a story for another day. But yeah, there is going to have to be some storytelling along those lines. But at the same time, I think the crucial thing about fast charging, and I'm repeating what we've discussed in previous pods in a way, is that it remains fair and it doesn't disrupt a race unnecessarily in terms of giving one driver a strategic advantage. But the fact that they're not allowed to double stack in the pits is naturally going to do that anyway. And then it's going to be about how they, you know, if half the grid are coming in on the same lap, on some of the circuits that this might be used, I wouldn't fancy being the person with the lollipop feeding back into the pit lane. So they're going to have to think about that.
Do the rules actively prohibit them from changing tyres?
No.
Because I know they only get the one set, but obviously they've got the previous set. Could they potentially do that, or is that not allowed?
Yes, they can. They can change the tyres. But obviously that is going to take an extra 15 seconds or so. You know, this isn't going to be an F1 style sub two second stop. This is going to be a bit longer. And with the fact that it's going to be right on the bubble, if you're going to be on the same lap as the rest of the field who are not pitting or who have already pitted, then you wouldn't choose to do that unless there is a very brittle track or surface breakage on the track, or if it's hot and the track is changing significantly. I don't see tyre stops being a feature unless there are exceptional circumstances. But let's see, you know, people are asking whether it's going to be a triumph or a farce. I actually don't think it'll be either. I think it'll be an occasional quirky addition to the races. And if it's done right, I think it could be quite good. I don't think it'll be tremendously popular with the drivers, but hey ho, you know, we're not there for the benefit and the whim of the drivers. I think the more curveballs you can occasionally throw into the product in terms of the race, then all the better for the viewer and people watching at home on TV. So if it's, you know, if it's relayed properly, which I'm sure Aurora and the likes of Tom and all the pundits will be able to do, I think it's entirely doable. But it will just, like a lot of things in Formula E that have been introduced, I think it will just take a bit of time to get it right and to convey it properly to the public.
I think fundamentally something like this was necessary. If you're trying to show the actual usage of electric cars, there had to be some way of showing that how quickly you can charge them or give them a charging boost, and that to be reflected in some form of performance benefit. I was just really hopeful that it was going to be something a little bit more inspiring than this. I probably mentioned this on before. I remember ahead of the Paris race going down to Versailles, and Qualcomm had this dynamic charging lane where they had a converted one of those Citroen truck thingies that they were showing at 100 kilometers an hour was dynamically charging from this bit of asphalt they'd laid down. And I was hoping by now, 10 seasons in, that something like this had, the technology had been there, or, you know, there was some way of having an extra bit of the lap. You could do it every lap if you wanted, just keep that charge going so you could go quicker in between. Pull into a pit stop and stop in, and somebody plugging the car in doesn't seem very futuristic to me. It feels much more like what people do on my street every night.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to understand who's driven this through. I think the promoters are the ones really pushing it. You know, from what I hear, I think this hasn't come directly from the title sponsors, from ABB. A lot of people presume that, but I'm not sure that's the case. I think they're certainly on board and they're quite open to it, but it's not been driven by them. I don't think the teams and manufacturers are hugely pushing for it. So it's a bit of a wonder exactly why they've done this. You know, don't forget that this has been delayed for a season. You know, it should have happened last season as well. It's been a bit of a carry-on in terms of how this has been delayed and how this is a legacy of all the problems that happened last season with Gen 3, and this is the last knock-on of it. So does that put more pressure on getting it right? I think so. You know, I don't think they can afford to go into Misano and for this, you know, for this infrastructure to cause issues and for some of them to not charge properly and then for drivers to lose points and championship momentum and for it to be affected. That's what can't happen.
Do you not think that they would quietly just, if they're not convinced about how it's working, they would just quietly let it drift away and never really talk of it again?
No, I think that train's left the station. I think that the opportunity for that existed last season, but I think now that they've dug in and they have done numerous tests with this infrastructure, which is supplied by WAE, the same company that have supplied the traction batteries, spec traction batteries for the championship, it's just been sold too much. You know, it's always been coming, and they have written it into the sporting regulations, and they're fully committed now. So they can't just say, oh well, you know, we were thinking of having it, but we're going to drop it. It's that point has gone now. So they have to make this work in some form or fashion. And like I said, I think they will make it work, but there will be some issues with this. And I think one of them is just getting, not necessarily the reliability of the infrastructure, because I hear that is actually pretty good, but it's just understanding how it fits into the sporting framework of a 40 or 45 minute race, because ultimately it could really backfire for the reasons I said previously, that, you know, it could impact races that are held on some of these circuits. And I think one of the reasons why more permanent circuits are coming into the championship is to give a bit of breathing space for initiatives like this. And I think this is just a classic example. I think Misano, Shanghai, Portland are almost perfect races for this new idea for attack charge, because they have the pits, they have the wide open space of the pit lanes, permanent pit lanes, and I just think that's gonna really help this plan. I can't see them using this on the genuine city street tracks. Not that there are many left in Formula E, you know, with Hyderabad going. We really only have Tokyo and Monaco left as genuine city street tracks.
I'd say Monaco is clinging on to the title of actually being a street track by its fingertips these days.
Yeah, we've mentioned that before, haven't we? You know, let's see. I mean, I don't think you can use... I mean, for instance, the pit lane at Sao Paulo, which is the garages facing each other in a sort of double-tiered pit lane, there's just no way that you could use attack charge there. How would you get the cars to filter back into the track when there's multiple cars?
It gives
cars?
Me flashbacks to the Donington Ersatz horror pits, but that's for another show. So we've established that it won't be at Mexico, but Tom, that is a track that's familiar to many motorsport fans, albeit in a slightly abridged version, but it's also one that has played host to some incredibly dramatic Formula E races, and ones that don't necessarily conform to the form guide. Thinking of the Miracle of Mexico last year, where Degrassi had the Mahindra on the podium as pole as well, wasn't it? What are you expecting for Mexico and the way to kick the season off?
It's always a difficult one to tell, isn't it? Because pre-season testing happened months ago. Lots of things will have happened behind the scenes since then, and you never really get an idea of exactly what's going to happen until you get into qualifying. Free practice is all well and good, but if teams are focusing on different strategies, if they're looking at race runs or something along the lines of that, then doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get an idea of what their one lap pace is going to be. And also there's the other side of that, that just because your one lap pace is brilliant doesn't mean over the course of the race that your car's going to be as efficient as you want it to be, and therefore you might qualify well, but you might drop back during the race. So what are we going to see there? Honestly, I really genuinely don't know. But I love that, because the one thing that we love about motorsport is its unpredictable nature, and Formula E delivers that by the bucketful. There's no way of telling exactly what is going to happen. You know, Mahindra, as you said last year, caught everybody by surprise by taking pole position and then getting themselves onto the podium. And then pretty much to all intents and purposes, the rest of their year was written off. It just went downhill from there, didn't it? So just because it goes well in Mexico doesn't necessarily mean it'll work out. The other side of the coin of that is Jaguar. You know, they didn't have a particularly fortuitous Mexico. Then sort of come Brazil, come Berlin, etc. They really started to get their act together from an operational perspective. And that's where the team then began to flourish and the drivers in turn with that. So honestly, I really don't know what's going to happen. I'd love to be able to sit here and say, yeah, we should see X, Y, and Z of a driver and a team at the top. But yeah, I haven't got a crystal ball, I'm afraid. I reckon, Sam, you can throw in a few wild cards there.
Well, here's an interesting one. The last time that anything other than a Porsche won in Mexico was when Lucas di Grassi won in 2019, that unbelievable last corner win against Wehrlein. Yeah. Now, that feels longer than 5 years ago, but that was the last time. So Jake Dennis obviously won last season, the season before Pascal Wehrlein took Porsche's first victory. And then in 2021 at Puebla, Wehrlein scored Porsche's first victory. He did it twice. Remarkable. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one from the perspective that Porsche have something there. And the understanding is that there is a certain way that they use their what they have, their powertrain and vehicle dynamically, the tyres, the Peraltada, the last right hander is crucial to a strong lap in Mexico. And whatever Porsche have, they've used it well and are unbeaten for a long time there. So I genuinely don't see anyone other than Da Costa, Wehrlein, Nato or Dennis winning. But having said that, I think what we saw at Valencia, usually Valencia we say, well, dismiss everything that's gone on at Valencia. But I think this year is probably just shining a light a bit more on the sort of hierarchy of Formula E, where Formula E is at in 2024. And I think really what we're seeing there is the fact that Jaguar and Porsche just have that little extra something on a track, which, you know, Valencia isn't that dissimilar to Mexico. So I think looking at the long straight, and there's a long corner feeding onto the straight of Valencia, albeit a left-hander. I just think that suits Porsche. You know, Jaguar were quicker at Valencia, but Porsche really were running to different programs, and I just see them being a bit too strong. And I just fancy going back to my Nostradamus-like prediction of Da Costa winning the championship. I can see Antonio Felix Da Costa really getting on top of his Mexican hoodoo, because he's never really been that strong in Mexico previously in previous season. So I think it'd be quite a good story for him to banish all that and start the season off with a sort of headline victory.
Well, I'm a very bold Sam and just say it's going to be Porsche. I mean, I wouldn't go anywhere near that, but I can make some generic broad strokes of what will happen. One of those famous five that we talked about won't make it out the first part of qualifying. One team will have its teammates drive into one another and start the year with a bit of bad blood between them. And one of the powertrain manufacturers will have somehow come in with it set up wrongly for that race and will look disproportionately bad and will immediately redress it in Diria. So there you go. That's my prediction for Mexico.
I'm looking forward to clipping the sounds of that and then playing them back to you after Mexico to see how accurate you were, V2B.
I'm quite happy to be held account for that. I like a broad brush stroke. Right, can't be all positive. So who's under pressure? Sam, who do you think is looking a bit shaky, shall we say, for 2024?
Well, I've already mentioned it, really. Sorry to say, but I think Maserati MSG are going to have a tough season ahead. Hope I'm wrong, but like I said, the disruption in the off-season, a bit of a brain drain in the engineering department, a lot of questions about the future of the team, the commercial framework of what they have there. And ultimately, I think, you know, going back to what I said about Jaguar, if you've got one major brick that's pulled out of the wall, it's very easy for it to start crumbling and tumbling quickly. And I just think that team are going to really struggle to get big results this season. Having said that, you know, they have Max Gunter, who has proved time and time again that on certain days he can just crush all before him. But I just see the fact that they're, I think, naturally going to slip behind through the reasons I mentioned, been really difficult to patch over this season. Daruvala is on a hell of a steep learning curve, and I think we've got to kind of just put Daruvala to one side for a bit and give him time. Hopefully, you know, he can have a long Formula E career, but I think it's not going to get off to the best of starts. So let's see. Other than that, I think ERT, formerly known as Neo 333, they had a fine season last season. They did a great job. But again, for similar reasons, not so much the structure of the team, but more the operational budget that they're running on and the resources that they don't have compared to some of the majority of the other teams, I think will just start to naturally tell this season. And there will be odd spikes and odd flashes of you know, some unbelievable cameos from Tictum. I'm sure they'll be there. And probably from Seto Kamara as well, who's got a little bit to prove compared to what he did last season. I just see them having a bit more of a struggle this season. But it's all relative in Formula E. You know, there's always a chance. It's not as if we're talking about Alfa Romeo or Alfa Tauri in Formula One. You know, this, you always have a chance in Formula E, even if you're way, way back in terms of relative speed and one lap pace. You know, you can always pick the bones out of a race and get lucky and get some points. So but I just see Maserati and ERT probably struggling a bit this season.
Tom, you're new to the paddock and probably don't want to make any enemies of yourself, so you know, you could, I'm expecting a very non-committal vanilla answer for you from you here, but go on.
it's a good point that Sam raises, though. Actually, you know, obviously as he said, the shuffle that Maserati have had over the off season, it's not going to be doing them any favors. ERT as well. I think Sergio Seto Kamara, you know, Dan Tictum scored double the points of him, more than double the points of, no, in fact, it was double the points, wasn't it? 14 points for Seto Kamara, 28 for Tictum at the end. Tictum very much, obviously, the stronger driver, especially the last three races of 2023. So I think that Seto Kamara is going to really sort of need to pull his finger out a little bit this year and try to get some strong results. He had a few good sort of flashes, but other than that, never really sort of got going in 2023. So I'd like to see him do a little bit better, and I'm sure that he'd like to see himself do a bit better. I think he could be under a bit of pressure, though. Obviously, ERT, what was Neo, have morphed into this ERT team over the winter, and I wonder what their performance level is going to be. You know, good points for them on the board last year, but they'll be hoping for more forward progress. And I suppose it depends on what the sort of relative level of the other teams are, which, are, as I said, we're probably not going to find out until we get qualifying underway in Mexico. So I guess we'll wait and find out. Who knows, maybe ERT have pulled a blinder out of the bag and they'll be fighting for top 10, but let's wait and see.
I tell you what, if it's as hot as it was last year in Sao Paulo in March, I'm going to be looking bloody shaky as well.
Well, on that note, I think the shakiness is a bit more behind the scenes. You know, the new CEO Jeff Dodds has come in, and he's only too aware, I think, of the some of the problems that have been consistent there. And, you know, we'll talk about what's going on with the calendar. No need for you to come on this, Tom, but obviously the announcement of the British rights coverage going to TNT was not exactly overwhelmingly rejoiced by fans, I think it's fair to say, if you read the comments on social media. And I think also, it's been a long time now since they've had a big new sponsor join. In fact, they've been going the other way. You know, Boss and Heineken and a few others are no longer part of the championship that were there before. Sort of, they were, you know, blue ribbon signings. So I think if I were senior level behind the scenes at Formula E, I might be a little bit shaky coming into this new season.
Yeah, I wrote about this actually on New Year's Day, just what the big challenges are for Formula E. And you know, a couple of those things, that the calendar, I mean, we're going to lose Hyderabad. I mean, that is 5 weeks away from a race at world championship level. I mean, that's just plainly unacceptable. You just can't have that. And if you've got a hint of something like that happening, you have a plan B. Formula E haven't got a plan B. You know, we're going to have a 7 week gap, or highly likely to have a 7 week gap between Diriyah at the end of January and then Sao Paulo mid-March, and it's just at the wrong time because there's no other racing on. So it's Formula E's chance to make hay when the sun's shining, and they're not going to be doing that. They're going to be rehashing highlights of previous races and talking about this and that, but we're not going to be going racing. So that's, yeah, that's hard to take, and it's a consistent thing, isn't it? You know, we talk about it pretty much every season, that one race generally falls by the wayside for whatever reasons. You know, we know the reasons are generally out of Formula E's direct control. Oh,
almost always out of their hands. And as we said, it's probably the hardest job in motorsport, putting that calendar together. But it's 10 seasons now, mate. 10 seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, the excuses are sort of wearing thin, even though it's generally not Formula E's problem in terms of the trigger of why it's happening. Is it time to look at the model of races? I mean, Hyderabad was pretty much in the slap bang in the city centre. Is it time to look at more stadia races? So races, you know, Formula E is looking at that, and they have had those. The fact remains that I think three of the last five new races that Formula E has done have fallen by the wayside. You know, Seoul is no more after one race, after one fixture.
Cape Town.
We've lost Cape Town, and we've lost probably now, it's yet to be official, but we believe that Hyderabad won't happen. Three of those races won't happen. So actually now, much more emphasis will be on Tokyo at the end of March. I think that is the biggest race that Formula E has probably ever done now, in terms of what it means, if it's a success, if it continues, if it becomes a permanent fixture. They have to make that work, and it has to be spectacular. I'm sure it will be. Everything that I hear is pretty good about that race, and I think the fact that it'll be the only time a city street track has raced in all of motorsport in Tokyo, they've got to use that, and they've got to market that extensively. And, you know, forget about cars doing erroneous speeds and, you know, a lot of the more creative elements, and some of them are just downright fallacies anyway. But let's just concentrate on something like Tokyo. Been amazing. Absolutely market the thing to death, and make not only the motorsport world but the sporting world take notice of what Formula E is doing in
Tokyo.
If
you were doing a dream Formula E calendar back in the very beginning of it, Tokyo would have been absolutely part of it. Ideally as a night race, just surrounded by neon and looked like something that almost came out of Blade Runner, but in a less dystopic way. I think it should be absolutely brilliant. And if I can find a way to get there, I will be there. Tom, the best bit about Formula E I found when I worked there was the cities and the brilliant places that you went. Obviously, Mexico City is a great place to kick off, but any ones you're particularly excited to get to go to?
Oh, all of them, to be honest with you, which I know is a broad answer. I love Tokyo. I have been there quite a few times because working for Gran Turismo, the company's based over in Tokyo. Yeah, of course, so yeah. I've been there a few times, and obviously it is the most densely populated city in the world. So the fact that they're able to put a street race on there is quite incredible. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to going to Brazil for the first time. I've never been to Brazil. I think that is going to be really, really good fun. And yeah, I think that Monaco, you can't go wrong with Monaco. It's a lovely place. I've been there a few times, fortunately, as well. Shanghai, again, love that circuit. So depending on what sort of layout we're running, because I don't know quite at the moment if they've released the track layout, but if it's the 1.2 kilometers long back straight, which I don't think it will be in full, then that's going to be interesting from an energy regeneration.
I mean, literally 500 overtakes down that.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'll have plenty of time to figure it all out. But I'm looking forward to that. And then obviously Portland as well. I love America. You know, the US is a great place, and everybody was sort of raving about Portland last year in terms of going into the city. You know, keep Portland weird was the slogan that they were sort of hammering home. So I'm looking forward to that in particular. But yeah, Tokyo, Monaco, Brazil and Portland, I think, are kind of the ones that stick out for me on the calendar this year. And I'm just looking forward to going and seeing some great racing on some great circuits.
Oh, you're in for a real treat. And I the thing I have the least concerns about is the quality of racing. And I think of the one thing you can always be guaranteed in Formula E is that the racing will be good, that the battle for the championship will be dramatic and will almost certainly go down to the last event, if not the last race. That part of it, absolutely fine. It's just whether enough people will be watching it, which is, a bigger picture thing.
I think the other thing that we must mention as well is that throughout this season, one of the hot topics is going to be the Gen 3 Evo, because that's going to come on stream for the autumn when they're going to be out testing this new look car as well. So there'll be some, you know, you might want to look at the hyphenrace.com this week when this podcast goes out to see the first look of this car, because I'll leave it up to you, but there's going to be some interesting changes to the dynamic.
Has it got new aero, Sam?
yeah, they've been in a wind tunnel for months and months, V2B. Of course they have. No, it's going to be pretty cosmetic, but I think, you know, a lot of the challenge is going to be using the active front powertrain kit and the new spec of Hankook tyres, because I anticipate, or certainly a lot of people who've already tested the new spec, a lot of drivers have sort of relayed to me that there was a big improvement with the active front powertrain kit in conjunction with this new spec of tyres. And, you know, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that this new Gen 3 Evo could be around the sort of 4 to 5 seconds quicker, ultimately, than the car that we have for this season. And that actually, you know, goes back to the last administration of Formula E boasting that that's what it would be in the first place. But finally, we'll get there with the second iteration of this homologation for Gen 3. And it'll be great. And, I think the mix of permanent and city street tracks as well, I think if it's a healthy mix, is fine. But I just really worry, as do a lot of the drivers and teams, that it will ultimately go away to more permanent circuits wholesale, which I think would be a massive mistake. But that's a debate for a future podcast, and I'm sure we can discuss that throughout the year.
Any other news business you want to drop in while you're on the mic?
Yeah, there's a little bit of news around. I mean, Tom mentioned the Shanghai configuration. We're going to have news of that very shortly, which will be interesting to get some drivers' reactions on how they, you know, quite a few of the drivers have driven some different configurations of the full circuit. I mean, Sebastian Buemi certainly has been to a different iteration, because he raced there when he was, I don't know, he must have been about 7 years old, wasn't he, back in 2008? I mean,
it's A1.
Buemi's, yeah, with A1 GP, sorry, yeah.
I was there. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, same here.
We'd have sat in the grandstand, we'd have been the only crowd.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, the WEC really struggled to get a crowd there, and let's hope that, you know, with it being about an hour outside of the main Shanghai metropolitan area, that they can get a good decent crowd there. Other news, the Gen 3 Evo scoop story, you'll want to look at that, mentioned that earlier. Gen 4 manufacturer commitments, there's going to be, again, a lot of speculation about who is going to sign up for Gen 4. We believe that Nissan and Jaguar are the two most likely to be around in Gen 4. Lot of questioning and a lot of decisions to be made, I think, throughout the manufacturers. So that's going to be really interesting to keep on top of. Taylor Bernard is going to become McLaren's reserve driver. He's a Formula 3 driver, drove for Genza last season. He did some laps in the Valencia test, acquitted himself extremely well.
He sounds like
well.
A semi-finalist in America's Got Talent. I've got to be honest.
Well, I just think it's great having Barnard at McLaren again, isn't it? I mean, what a story. I'm not sure he'll come up with, some revolutionary composite solutions. But no, I hear great things about him. He really impressed the Neon McLaren team at Valencia, and he's going to be an official McLaren reserve driver for this season. He's only 19 years of age, so it's good to have some new blood in the championship. A few TV deals have been confirmed as well. Service TV and Red Bull and DF1 in Germany have been signed up to show the races. They're all the streaming.
Are they all taking your voices, Tom? Or I guess they'll probably have them translated, won't they?
That's a good question. I wonder if there is a German equivalent of Tom Brooks. Probably is somewhere. I'm not 100% sure. I'm probably not qualified to comment. All I know is that you'll be able to hear me in the UK at the moment, but I'm sure that it'll be available elsewhere.
Make sure you look after Dario as well when you're on with Dario. He needs a helping hand.
He was most perturbed in London, though, I must say, Sam, because I happen to have a habit of standing up when I commentate, at least on the start of a race, because I think it's a bit of the Murray Walker sort of syndrome, really. I find it gets your diaphragm you know, working a bit better. And I was standing up during that race for the entirety, and I often dance around the commentary box, not sort of doing the bloody quick step or whatever you like, but I just sort of patter from one foot to the other because I'm sort of so full of energy, really. And Dario was just looking at me like a man possessed. He's like, "What on earth are you doing there?" When we had a, you know, red flag, I was like, "Oh, sorry about that. It's just what I do." And then he started standing up and he got into it as well. So I think I could start a new trend. We'll strictly come Formula E or something.
Well, you're the anti-Nichols, because he was usually on a chaise lounge, wasn't he, with a cocktail or something. So
Football Manager on the go.
Very good.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it. You know, the only thing to say is looking forward to Mexico. I'll be on the ground from Thursday morning. Looking forward to catching up with everybody, bringing all the news to the-race.com. And our next pod, we've got Frédéric Bertrand from Mahindra. He's confirmed that he's going to be picking the bones out of Mexico City. So let's hope that there are some more miracles of Mexico.
There's some meat on them. Good stuff. Well, I look forward to that. I really look forward to hearing Tom get behind the mic and call what I'm sure will be an absolutely fabulous first race of the season. Like Sam said, make sure you check out all of his latest goings-on from the paddock on the-race.com. And Tom, do you want to play us out with one of your little sound effects?
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to think. I could try and think of... well, actually, hang on. Let's try that.
He's got a magic desk. Just press
the
button.
I have got a magic desk. I didn't push the fader up again. That was a trombone.
What was that?
That was a trombone. That's every time Sam tells a bad joke.
Well, keep that to hand. And on that note, goodbye.
The Athletic.